Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Good evening. We begin tonight with new reporting and new details on the search of the former president's Florida mansion. New word tonight that the Secret Service was told in advance that the FBI would be going in. Also, what the basis for the search was and how concerns about national security played into the decision. So there's a lot of new details, which serves as an antidote to a day's worth of speculation and partisan conspiracy theories and warnings of violence. Let's go to our reporters, CNN's Pamela Brown and Caitlin Collins. So, Caitlin, what more are you learning about the type of documents that were recovered in the search and what they may have related to? Sorry, can't get Caitlin yet. Pamela, you've been reporting on what triggered this search, namely concerns about what the former president had and had not already turned over to the federal government, the questions about the truthfulness of his representatives. What else do you know?
Right. Remember, this investigation had been going on for more than a year. And in June, the FBI met with some of Donald Trump's representatives at Mar-a-Lago, saw the room where some of these additional documents were being held, sent a letter after saying it should be padlocked. The bottom line is, I'm told through a source familiar, is that the FBI believed that Donald Trump and his representatives hadn't turned over everything that it should have or it was required to that belonged to the government. We know previously the National Archives had taken 15 boxes from Mar-a-Lago, including classified information. And so in this case, the FBI executed the search warrant, I'm told, because of that fact that they believe that there were additional documents there, some classified that belonged to the government, and that there were national security implications, that it went beyond just concerns that some of these documents could be marked as classified, but that there could be national security implications. I'm also told by this source that there was concern that Trump's representatives weren't completely truthful with investigators over the course of this investigation. So there were certainly a couple of factors at play, but I do want to be transparent. While we do know some of this information that's coming out now, what we don't know right now, Anderson, is whether Donald Trump is the target of investigation for mishandling classified information, whether this was simply a case of the FBI wanting to make sure these documents went into safe hands and the government, whether it has to do with lying to the FBI. We simply don't have the answers to those questions. Yeah. And I can go ahead and tell you, Donald Trump's teams will be arguing that he had the authority to declassify information as president.
Caitlin, did people in the former president's orbit have any indication that this investigation, which had been ongoing for months, could be ramping up?
No, they were actually quite caught off guard on this, Anderson, based on what we've heard from sources, which is that over the last several months, they had essentially come to this belief that this investigation into whether or not the former president mishandled classified information had stalled. They had not actually seen any movement based on what we have heard from sources. That's remarkable given, of course, we did report yesterday that 2 months ago was when investigators made that very rare visit to Mar-a-Lago where they met with two of Trump's attorneys. They were shown the room where these documents were being held, the ones that he had not turned over to the National Archives after they had turned over about a dozen or so boxes, Anderson. That was a room that the Justice Department asked them to further secure, and they put a padlock on the door to do so. Of course, that was a padlock that was broken off when this search warrant was carried out yesterday. And so it's very clear that this investigation had not actually stalled, and it's not clear why they believed that, but that is what we were hearing from them. And so that does seem to be why there is a measure of surprise in Trump's orbit over this matter.
Pam, is it known how many boxes of documents the former president initially took with him to Mar-a-Lago?
Well, what we can tell you is that 15 boxes went to the National Archives, and then an attorney for Trump told the Washington Post today that FBI agents took around a dozen boxes from Mar-a-Lago after executing this search warrant. And so these are a lot of documents that were taken from the White House. Now, how many were actually classified? How many were, implicated national security? How many had Trump declassified when he was in the White House? I mean, these are the questions we have, and we don't have answers to them. And I think it is important to point out that there's still a lot that we don't know about what was in these boxes taken from Mar-a-Lago.
Pamela Brown, Caitlin Collins, appreciate it. There is more breaking news. The FBI today seizing the cell phone of a Republican congressman who's best known for pushing a bogus conspiracy theory about the 2020 election. His name is Scott Perry. CNN's Sarah Murray joins us now with more on that story. So what is Scott Perry saying tonight?
Well, he put out a lengthy statement describing what happened, and he said, this morning, while traveling with my family, three FBI agents visited me and seized my cell phone. Now he goes on to say, this cell phone is full of information about political activities, personal and private discussions, legislative activities, things he says the government has no business looking into. What we don't know is what the FBI is investigating that led them to Scott Perry's cell phone. We know that Perry was, you know, integral in pushing Donald Trump's claims of election fraud. We know that he actually introduced the former president to Jeffrey Clark, who was a Department of Justice official who was little known at the time, who was willing to go along with Donald Trump's election fraud claims and willing to, you know, try to stage a coup, essentially, at the Justice Department. So it's not clear if it is perhaps related to that. You know, we reported earlier this summer that Jeffrey Clark's home was searched, so he's been under scrutiny from investigators. The other thing we don't know about what's going on with Scott Perry's phone is what investigators will be able to get from it. CNN previously reported that Perry had had a number of discussions with Mark Meadows, the former White House chief of staff, and in those discussions, they used an encrypted messaging app. So we don't know if, you know, those messages could still be on his phone.
They used Signal, wasn't it?
They used Signal, right. Yeah. So we don't know if those could still be on Scott Perry's phone. And again, we don't know if that is what investigators were looking for or if it could be something else altogether. So there are still a lot of questions, but obviously a big deal that they're coming for a sitting congressman's cell phone.
Yeah, Sir Murray, appreciate it. Thank you. To get perspective now on the legal and the political impacts of all these stories. Joining us tonight is CNN Chief National Correspondent and Inside Politics anchor John King, CNN legal analyst Elliot Williams, who served as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Obama administration, and CNN Chief Political Analyst Gloria Borger. John, how significant are these new details? The search came after suspicions of withheld materials, that documents at Mar-a-Lago had national security implications.
Well, we have more of a sketch now. We still don't have key information. What do they mean by national security implications? How many documents? What do they relate to? But we now at least have a broader sketch of the urgency that convinced the FBI and then the Justice Department, all the way up to the Attorney General, to take this unprecedented step to serve a search warrant at the home of the former president of the United States. Now, there's a lot of hyperbole being thrown around. Look, make no mistake about it, Anderson. At some point, the Justice Department will face a credibility test, both in court and in public opinion. That day should not be today. We are early in an investigation, or we're at some point in an investigation where the Justice Department says it can't talk to us just yet. But the fact that they took the extraordinary nature suggests this was a 15-month process. Many communications with Trump and with his lawyers, including a meeting in June that the former president stopped in. So something happened between June and August where the FBI saw a reason, we don't know the specifics, to believe something was at risk, some document was at threat. And just very quickly on this point that Trump has the power to declassify records, that's true. A, but there's a process, and B, even if he declassified everything, they don't belong to him. He can't take it with him. The Records Act is very clear. The documents belong to the American people, and they go to the National Archives, period.
Well, it's also remarkable, John King, I mean, based on his criticism of others over the years on, you know, handling emails or you know, alleged security violations.
If you're looking for intellectual consistency here, Anderson, you came to the wrong town, in the sense that if you listen to Donald Trump and you listen to his Republican allies, they remember Hillary Clinton should be about 6 years into her prison sentence at Leavenworth, according to these Republicans, because she set up a server at home that might have sensitive information go through it, that it was possible the Chinese or the Russians could hack into. They raised that at the point. That was a judgment error by Secretary Clinton. I'm not here to defend Hillary Clinton's email server, but Donald Trump should we run for president of the United States again? Donald Trump is innocent. The Justice Department is overstretching. This is political use of the investigative powers. There is zero intellectual consistency in Trump's argument or that of his Republican allies at the moment.
Elliot, from a legal perspective, what do these developments tell you?
Yeah, I think the newest development today is this idea of people in Trump's orbit not being honest or candid or forthcoming with information when asked. Look, it is a crime to give a false statement to a law enforcement officer. That doesn't have to be under oath or sworn or you know, when we're talking about perjury or something like that, if an agent is trying to find out where documents are and you lie to that agent, that is a crime. In addition to that, Anderson, of course, there's the raft of possible crimes that might be investigated here involving sort of mishandling or mutilating or tearing up documents and so on. So the newest thing today by far is this allegation of dishonesty. But again, all of these crimes that we're talking about possibly being investigated are incredibly serious and reason for concern and alarm.
And Gloria, I understand you have some new reporting about how the search could be pushing the former president to speed up a 2024 announcement.
Right. A group of my colleagues and I are reporting this evening that some top Republicans who have spent an awful lot of time these past months trying to tell Donald Trump, don't declare for the presidency until after the midterm elections because they were worried he was going to be a divisive figure, are now changing their minds. And that even one top Republican has called him up, at least one, and said, you know, I'm really thinking you ought to do it now. And the reason is that the Republican Party, it seems, has been so united with him, and they believe that there is another issue for them to talk about aside from the 2020 election, which was Donald Trump's favorite issue. But now this could become his issue, and he can portray himself as the victim, as the leader of people who feel victimized in this country and don't like the deep state, and that this would give their people more momentum than, in fact, the Democrats might have, say, because of the Roe Wade decision, or they're sick of Donald Trump. So they're now changing their minds.
John, there's new reporting from the New York Times tonight that you may not have seen yet, that the former president dismissed a push from some of his advisors today to fly back to Mar-a-Lago and immediately announce a new presidential campaign.
Look, there's this calculation. Do you take advantage of the outrage among your supporters to announce now? The midterm elections, Anderson, are 90 days away. So I think any speculation about how this could impact 2024, let alone 2022, is premature. 3 months ago, the Democrats were in a mess. Now the Democrats are in better shape. That's just this year. But the idea that Trump could play victim and use this to somehow block out rivals in 2024, that's the thinking of some of his people. That is because they play on the power of grievance, and now they believe they have a grievance, but we have no facts on the table. So that is their political calculation. If he announces he's running for president now, it changes how he can raise money. It changes how he can move around the country. So it gives him some benefits in claiming political grievance and claiming now I'm a candidate. The Justice Department shouldn't chase me down. Elliot can explain that the rules, that's not the way the rules work. But this has been an ongoing drama in Trump land. And so today it is he should rush home and announce, or he should rush it out before Labor Day. There'll be another story tomorrow, and eventually he'll say something, and that's when we'll start the clock.
And, I mean, Elliot, is it accurate that the former president and his legal team would get a copy of the warrant, which he could release to the public? I mean, isn't the warrant required to list everything they anticipate finding, or can some of it be sealed?
No. Only the warrant's actually just an administrative document that says that we believe that there's evidence of a crime here. It's got the signature on it. The good stuff, Anderson, that you're talking about is in the affidavits and applications for the warrant. Now, look, he gets an inventory of all of the materials that were seized from his property. If he really is saying that these are declassified or unimportant documents or just, you know, mementos from his trip to Finland or whatever, then certainly he can release that. He's going to have that information. But all of the documentation that really digs in as to what, you know, I think what the public wants to see isn't going to be seen either until someone is charged with a crime or the basis for keeping it secret goes away and when an investigation is closed.
And Gloria, I mean, do you believe that this will have an impact on the midterms, or too soon to tell? I mean, we don't know what's come of this.
I think it's really too soon to tell. Other than when you talk to Republicans who are saying, I mean, one Republican who's very close to Donald Trump said to me today, "I have not seen the party this unified behind something in a long time. I mean, when do you see DeSantis and Pence on the same page defending Trump?" And they believe that there is enough of a lead time that this could affect and could motivate Republican voters, which they've been kind of worried about, particularly if Donald Trump were to announce, because he's been so divisive. But it's early, as John was saying, and we're just going to have to wait and see how this plays out. Yeah. The advantage they have, of course, is that the Justice Department isn't going to say anything in return. Yeah. So they can punch and punch and punch
And it's very likely that the Justice Department will say, stay silent.
Gloria Borger, John King, Elliot Williams, thank you. Next, a former federal judge who signed off on numerous search warrants during her time on bench joins us. And later, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on the string of legislative victories for the current president, now somewhat overshadowed by all the news on the former president. More AC 360 to come after the break. Breaking news tonight, new reporting that yesterday's search of Mar-a-Lago was motivated by the belief that the former president or his team were holding on to government documents, which, according to our source on the story, had national security implications. As for the warrant itself, it pertained to the handling of classified documents, as well as the Presidential Records Act. Now, according to the source, there was also suspicion after months of discussion on the matter that the former president's representatives were not being completely truthful with investigators. Joining us now, former federal judge Nancy Gertner. She's currently a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Judge Gertner, great to have you on again. I understand you reviewed search warrants as part of your duties while on the federal bench. Can you just walk us through what standard has to be met and how that may undermine some of the accusations out there from the former president and his allies flying around today?
Well, there has to be a sworn document. And if someone lies in the document, then there will be consequences for lying, for false statements. So the agent has to come and give you an affidavit. Sometimes there could be sworn testimony, but usually it's an affidavit. And the affidavit will say, I have probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed and that evidence of that crime will be found in the place that I want to search. And then he has to show, or she has to show, describe the place to be searched and the evidence to be seized, and the code word in the law is with particularity. So they can't say, hey, something's wrong is going on at Mar-a-Lago. I want to go in. They have to describe what the crimes are that they think have taken place, and they have to describe, you know, that the crimes have taken place there, and they have to describe what they're searching for and the place to be searched and the things to be seized with some specificity. Now, a judge relies on what the agents tell them. And, you know, as we've seen in the Breonna Taylor case, the agents may not necessarily be telling the truth. But frankly, in a case like this, with the levels of review and the likely level of a Garland review, I imagine that every I has been dotted and T crossed.
You would think that Merrick Garland himself would have looked at the application for the search warrant.
Not only do I think that just because it's the president involved, but from my understanding, from people who are working for Garland and from what I know of him, he's a micromanager. I mean, some of the frustration with the pace of investigations are precisely because he's a micromanager. So it would be inconceivable that he didn't sign off on this search warrant, that this affidavit, and this decision.
And how strong a case would have had to be made to this judge in order to get the judge to agree?
Well, the judge has to understand that a crime, that they're investigating a crime, right? It's not just ordinary misconduct. And here, the likely crime is the president's violation of the Presidential Records Act and inappropriate handling or retention of classified documents. So you have to know that a crime has taken place. It's not some, you know, just itinerant misconduct. And the judge would have to know that they have to be seeing the evidence of the probable cause to believe that a crime has taken place. What would the probable cause look like? I'm just speculating, as we all are, right? So if the National Archives got classified document, they have page 7 to page 9 and they're missing 8. On their face, the documents would make it clear that something is missing. Then there's the story, which I imagine would be in the affidavit, of the FBI visit to Mar-a-Lago in June, this past June, in which they saw where the documents are kept. And the question is, did they see something at that time that made it clear that what was in there was more than just an occasional memento from Kim Jong-un and something more substantial than that? So the judge has to look at the evidence that's given to him to see if there was probable cause to believe that a crime had been committed. So that's what I mean. And they obviously rely on the information you're given. Right. You rely on the good faith of the people who are giving you the information.
Is the warrant a sign that perhaps a case was made, documents were at risk of being destroyed?
Well, that's very, it's very interesting. I mean, the clearly there could have been a subpoena to a grand jury, and where you send the subpoena to Trump, to Trump's lawyers, and you really rely and you trust them to turn over everything. Clearly, and again, I'm speculating, something happened here that led the agents and the DOJ to believe that in the ordinary course, documents were not going to be turned over, and that therefore they had to take the step of a search warrant. Now, they really don't have to justify going to a search warrant, right? There's no legal justification. You can send to have a, you can use a search in place of a subpoena. But I'm assuming that to take this step, there had to be some reason to believe that documents were not being preserved, or, or that they were not being truthful. Let me just add one thing, because this is driving me nuts. This is now out. This is not in my lane as a federal judge, but the notion that the DOJ, that the White House would have been involved in this makes no sense. This was a week that the Democrats were doing a victory lap, and the last thing they wanted to do was to have the coverage taken over by the search of Mar-a-Lago. Mm. And that alone suggests to me that this had been an independent decision of the DOJ and an independent decision of Garland.
Judge Nancy Gertner, really fascinating. I appreciate it. Coming up, the historical parallels that the former president is attempting to draw between the FBI search of Mar-a-Lago and the Watergate break-in. I'll speak with CNN political analyst Carl Bernstein, who did much of the original reporting, of course, on the Watergate break-in scandal. And former President Nixon's White House counsel, John Dean, joins us as well. Again, our breaking news. According to a source, the search of Mar-a-Lago came after authorities believed the former president or his team failed to return materials that were government property. And it was believed the documents had national security implications. Now, the search warrant pertained to both the handling of classified documents and the Presidential Records Act. The law was established after President Nixon's Watergate scandal to ensure that presidential records are the property of the U.S. government and not held as private property. Now, in another historical parallel, the Mar-a-Lago search came on the 48th anniversary of Nixon's resignation. Meantime, in a statement yesterday, the former president proceeded to kind of mangle Watergate history, quoting now, "What is the difference," he said, "between this and Watergate, where operatives broke into the Democrat National Committee? Here in reverse, Democrats broke into the home of the 45th president of the United States." Joining me now is journalist and co-author of All the President's Men, the definitive account of the Watergate scandal, Carl Bernstein, who's also a CNN political analyst, also a CNN contributor, former Nixon White House counsel John Dean. Carl, what is your reaction, first of all, to the search and what you're hearing from people in the former president's orbit?
Well, the first thing is, this is a deadly serious matter. In the view of even former top officials of the Trump administration, I spoke today to one of the senior most intelligence officials throughout the Trump presidency. And the point he made, without knowing what these materials are, is that it's virtually impossible, in his view, that the FBI and the Justice Department would take this action without knowledge or belief that the materials contain the most sensitive national security information of real magnitude, that this could not be done unless there was reason to believe that the national security could be grievously injured if these documents got out. It's not just in this person's view, but it's speculative, that this would be about the lawyers not being totally truthful, but rather not being truthful, or that there is knowledge that the government now has that what is being withheld is of serious, serious importance.
John, was this a reverse Watergate break-in, as the former president was saying?
Not even close, Anderson. This was authorized. It was an authorized court proceeding to search and seize materials. And obviously, as Carl says, they were important materials. The Watergate was a bungled break-in by a bunch of actually clowns, in a way, in their effort to get into the Democratic National Committee and repair a bug and take some photographs after having been earlier in the Democratic National Committee. Very different parallels. And Trump referring to Watergate, of course, focuses on the break-in. And Watergate became so much more than a bungled break-in. It became a cover-up. It became an abuse of power by a president.
And Carl, how does the Department of Justice under Merrick Garland compare to what was happening in the Department of Justice during Watergate?
I think that they're both very principled And leaders in the Justice Department, after Nixon fired the Saturday Night Massacre, he fired the leaders of the Justice Department. And those leaders were pursuing the case against Nixon with great independence. Similarly, Merrick Garland here is trying to follow, as far as we know, where the leads go with suggestions, and probably more than suggestions, that a crime has been committed. He would never have done this unless there were evidence of a crime having been committed, and by Donald Trump and those around him. And similarly, in Watergate, you had the situation where the officials who were fired by the President of the United States had similar beliefs about where the case was going against Richard Nixon and the cover-up.
John, do you believe that just searching for, you know, classified documents that the president may have taken from the White House when he left would be enough for the FBI to decide to do this?
It depends upon the content of the documents. There could be some very serious, compromisable material, national security data, blueprints, who knows what is there. But there are even documents apparently that are so highly classified that their classification is classified. So they can't even list some of the material that they have acquired in this search. So yes, I think there can be stuff that can affect the United States. It can show sources and methods. National security has long been an area of particular attention, and the National Archives, since the Presidential Records Act, has been very aggressive in going after former staff, never to reach a president before, but former staff or people, very senior political people. Sandy Berger, who was the National Security Advisor in the Clinton administration, General Petraeus, who was writing a book. They've all experienced what happens if you misuse classified material. And so this is not unprecedented. It has just never reached a president ever abusing his power and taking material like this that we're dealing with.
Yeah, John Dean, Carl Bernstein, thank you. Just ahead, we're going to take you to the scene outside Mar-a-Lago, or Randy Kaye, and how the former president's most ardent supporters reacted to the news of the FBI search next. Even before we learn more details about what might be in those boxes of material the FBI removed from the former president's residence, Republican officials had already rallied to his defense. Some demanded investigations or complained about the, quote, weaponization of the Justice Department. Also speaking up were the former president's most ardent supporters who attended his rally, shared his conspiracies, and generally support him in much of what he does. As we learn in a moment from CNN's Donnie O'Sullivan, some have gone on online with violent rhetoric about a civil war and, quote, lock and load have been some of the phrases used. But first, 360's Randy Kaye joins us from outside Mar-a-Lago tonight. So a lot of people have been gathering outside Mar-a-Lago in support of the former president. What have you been hearing from folks there?
Anderson, a much larger group earlier today, still some of them hanging around here tonight. Almost everyone we spoke with is very angry about the fact that the FBI came here to Mar-a-Lago just yesterday. They believe, they didn't say what the basis for this was, but they believe that Donald Trump has been cooperating with the Department of Justice, which is investigating the handling of presidential records and presidential documents. They don't think that it was a good idea for the FBI to come to Mar-a-Lago, especially when the former president wasn't even home. Here's what else some of his supporters told me.
They don't want the truth. That's the bottom line. They don't want the truth.
You don't think that's why they came here to Mar-a-Lago to try and find out the truth and recover the archives?
No. They are scared to death of Donald Trump.
It's just a show. This is like maybe impeachment number four here for Trump. That's all it is. That's what I think. I mean, they didn't get it the first time, the Russian thing. They didn't get it the second time, right, with Ukraine. They didn't get it the third time with January 6th, I think they know they're running out of time there. They raid a home, and CNN cameras are there, and some of his past people. They know what's going on. It's all for a show to make Trump so he cannot run again.
You don't think that there was a real reason to come
here?
No, it's just a show?
I know there's no real reason. I know it in my heart. I know it in my spirit. He has never lied about anything.
All right. Well, we know that isn't true. And when I quickly pointed out to her, just as an example, that the former president is still claiming that he won the 2020 election, she continued to say that he has never lied. But also, Anderson, it's worth noting that many of the supporters were saying to me that the FBI and the Department of Justice are corrupt. I was quick to point out to them that it was Donald Trump who appointed Christopher Wray as director of the FBI, but they continued to say that he was corrupt. We also talked about Hillary Clinton's emails. I reminded them that it was Donald Trump who called for an investigation into her classified emails, but the irony was lost on them. They continued to say that he didn't do anything wrong and she did. Anderson?
Randy Kaye, appreciate it. Perspective now on what we just saw from CNN's Joni O'Sullivan, who has attended many of the former president's rallies and spoken to some of his most ardent supporters over the years, and CNN political commentator Alyssa Farah Griffin, who served in the previous administration as director of strategic communications. Donny, what have you been seeing online from the president's supporters?
Yeah, I wanted to show you, Anderson, what posts had showed up on one very popular pro-Trump website last night after that news broke. People commenting, lock and load. Somebody else saying, I'm just going to say it. Garland needs to be assassinated. Simple as that. Somebody else saying, kill all feds. Now, I think people will rightly ask, why are we talking about some anonymous threats made on the internet? Well, these are the very same forms. In fact, that website is one of the very same websites where many data people were talking about plans for January 6th in advance of the attack on the Capitol, people discussing how to attack police officers. And we know people who are lurking in these websites are not are people who sometimes go off and do these acts. I want to show you another post. This one was a top comment under that lock and load post, and somebody asked, "Are we not in a cold civil war at this point?" Now, the person who actually posted that, Advanced Democracy, which is a nonprofit that does a lot of public service research, was actually able to tie that person's account back to a U.S. Capitol rioter. Somebody who has been convicted, and even last night they were posting this kind of talk about civil war. So you can see why this stuff matters. Of course, it is very, very difficult to tell what is a serious threat and what is something that's...
Alyssa, what impact do you think this raid is going to have on some of the most extreme of the former president supporters?
Well, I think that, you know, Donny's reporting is excellent of what some of these fringe figures who themselves could be or have been radicalized are saying. But I'd also look to the very prominent Republicans and what they've said. So Mark Levin, you know, one of the biggest right-wing talk show hosts in the country, said this was the worst attack on the Republic in his lifetime, never mind 9/11 or many other tragedies. And even elected officials across the board, Republicans, have come out and condemned this, said this is banana Republic kind of nonsense, demonizing law enforcement and the FBI. So that trickles down to supporters of the president, to the fringe who themselves may become radicalized. And I would note, too, the Republican Study Committee, the biggest conservative bloc in the House of Representatives, took a group of members up to Bedminster tonight to show their support for the former president. All while we don't even know what this warrant entailed, what the underlying potential alleged crime was. They're saying, we know it's not true, the FBI was wrong, and we're in solidarity with the president. So politically, Donald Trump's actually in the probably strongest position he's been in some time. Mm. But the rhetoric around it is very scary.
Donny, are federal officials, others concerned about the sort of potential for...
Yeah, our colleague...
For how this... What the ripple effects of this
that might translate into real violence. Our colleague Whitney Wild was speaking to a congressional security source. She said that shortly after that news broke last night that the U.S. Capitol Police were talking about plans of if this could convert into violence. And as Alyssa mentioned there, look, a lot of these threats, a lot of this very charged rhetoric is being made on major social media platforms. But since January 6th, we have seen so many of the MAGA world move to alternative social media platforms, given that Trump and others got kicked off right after January 6th. So that's another challenge as well to monitor these threats.
Alyssa, what do you make of the reporting that some of the president's advisors wanted him to fly to Mar-a-Lago today to announce his candidacy? According to the New York Times, that is.
Yeah, I believe that reporting to be true. There's been talk in Trump world since before this raid of him announcing in August or September to get ahead of the several different investigations into him, Georgia, New York, and of course, the January 6th and DOJ investigations. There are some in his inner circle that I believe are telling him this is the moment. I mean, even other contenders for 2024, Ron DeSantis, Mike Pence, Mike Pompeo, put out statements defending Trump after this raid took place. So I think they want to kind of capture the moment and hone in. And the thought is it kind of boxes in DOJ if he's an announced candidate. That really tests that line of, well, can you indict a former president or someone who is running again for president? I think the former president's yet to make a decision, but I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up announcing sooner.
Do you think this will make it more likely he runs?
I do think so. I think so. I feel when he feels the legal walls closing in, I think that he wants that mantle of power back, of being in the White House, of overseeing these agencies, frankly, of carrying out, you know, his retaliation for them once he's in office. You've seen rhetoric from those closely aligned to him about how they want to gut the FBI, they want to gut the DOJ, they want to, you know, kick out the deep state, meaning, you know, career professionals who do their job. So I think he's more motivated than ever to run.
Yeah, and that is what they're calling the deep state, career professionals who want to do their jobs. Alyssa Farah Griffin, thank you, Donnie O'Sullivan as well. Coming up, I'll be joined by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. We'll get his reaction, the latest on the FBI search of the former president's home, plus the recent string of legislative victories from Democrats, including a major spending bill on health care and clean energy. More AC360 to come after the break. As we learn more about the details of the FBI search of Mar-a-Lago, Democrats are equally focused on a string of legislative victories they hope can bolster their chances in the months leading into the midterms. Now, the most recent being a CHIPS bill signed into law today by President Biden. It spends hundreds of billions of dollars to compete with China in building the semiconductors that power cars and smartphones and medical equipment and more. Senate Democrats are also celebrating the passage of another major bill that's been the source of a lot of drama and trading, what they call the Inflation Reduction Act. The House is expected to take it up Friday before the president can sign it. Bill touches on a wide array of Democratic priorities, hundreds of billions for clean energy initiatives, extension of health care subsidies, and for the first time, it allows Medicare the power to negotiate prices for certain drugs. I want to talk about it with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who joins me now. Majority Leader Schumer, appreciate you being with us. I want to get to the legislation, the Inflation Reduction Act, in a moment. But just a question off the beginning. We've seen a lot of your Republican colleagues calling for investigations into the DOJ, the FBI, after the search warrant at Mar-a-Lago yesterday. Senator Josh Hawley even called for Attorney General Garland to, quote, resign or be impeached. What do you make of the reaction of some of your fellow lawmakers?
Look, I am not commenting until further information comes out. I think it's premature, and I think it's premature for everybody to comment. We don't exactly know what's there yet.
On the Inflation Reduction Act, there's a lot in the bill, major initiatives intended to tackle drug pricing, climate, inflation. If it's passed through the House and onto the president's desk, what part of this bill do you think most Americans will notice first? What would actually have an effect on their lives immediately?
Well, pretty soon, for instance, the price of drugs will be limited. Insulin for Medicare patients will go down to $35 a month. Right now, it's $600-$800. So many millions of senior citizens and others can't afford the insulin, yet they desperately need it because so many have diabetes. And starting next year, early next year, no one will pay more than $2,000 for prescription drugs. So many people have these illnesses, and they have these wonderful pills, but they cost $500 or $1,000 a pill, and they don't know what to do. It will be now limited to $2,000 maximum payment. So those will take effect right away. But some of the energy changes are going to take effect quite soon, too. For instance, where the focus on clean energy will mean that your electric bill will go down around $1,000 by 2030. It means that appliances will cost a lot less than they have before. And immediately in 2023, the tax code will become fairer because a lot of the big corporations who paid no taxes will start paying them, and individuals will finally be audited. The Trump administration did a despicable thing. They basically didn't audit anybody who made over $1 million, and they said, if you made $40,000, $1 million. We're going to audit you because there's fraud in the earned income tax credit. It was despicable.
So
we have put money in for more auditors and only for people who make above $400,000. So a lot of these loopholes that wealthy people use lawyers and accountants to get away with paying taxes, those are going to close. So there's a lot that's going to happen soon, and then some will happen later.
The legislation is supposed to reduce U.S. carbon emissions, I think, by roughly 40% from 2005 levels by 2030. Where will the majority of those cuts come from? I mean, how will this bill actually enable those reductions?
There's it's across the board many different things. Clean power will get incentives. If your electricity, which is about 30-40%, your power of our carbon emissions, will become much more focused on clean power, water, solar, wind. That'll happen. Electric cars will become more available. And, of course, they're far less polluting than our present internal combustion engines. And there will be all kinds of programs that will reduce carbon going into the atmosphere for agriculture, for big industrial factories, and many things like that. So this is amazing. The original BBB bill, Anderson, called for 45% reduction. In this bill, which, of course, I had a compromise with Joe Manchin on, produces a 40% reduction, far and away the most significant thing we've done against global warming ever, by legions, a whole lot.
We've seen a lot of reporting about the red lines that Senators Manchin and Sinema had, the provisions that had to be taken out or changed before they could support the bill. Did you have any red lines during the negotiations? Were there any parts of this bill that had to be included, or you would lose the support of your caucus?
Well, I think we had to have a program that aimed at making average people's lives better by reducing inflation and reducing their costs, by making drugs cost less. But also, even though Senator Manchin added some provisions into the bill that I don't like and many of us don't like, we had a North Star, 40% reduction of carbon into the atmosphere by 2030. And we stuck with all of those. So, you know, politics is the art of getting something done. Very easy to sit there and say, let's get nothing done. That's what Leader McConnell focuses on. He's proud of a legislative graveyard. I try to get things done, and it takes a lot of work. It takes tremendous persistence. You know, my father, who passed away in November, taught me something by example. If you persist when you're doing the right thing and keep at it and don't give up, he would call it, God would reward you. Mm. Bottom line is that if you persist, you can get it done. Our caucus persisted. We reached many cul-de-sacs and dead ends, but we kept at it, and we got a great bill, one of the most significant pieces of legislation in decades.
You've got the CHIPS and Science Act just signed by the president, the Inflation Reduction Act coming up in the House. The end of July polling put President Biden's approval ratings, as you know, near the lowest of his presidency. Do you think the Democrats have done what they need to do enough to convince voters you should remain in control of Congress?
Yeah. We've been gaining over the last few weeks or the last few months, Anderson, because people are seeing the Republican Party's extreme. The Supreme Court decisions, of course, Dobbs on abortion, but also on guns, also on environment. The fact that the January 6th hearing showed what happened, and just the rhetoric, the kind of angry, almost anti-democratic rhetoric that's coming out of the Republican Party. People were starting to say, I don't want them to govern. But they had a question. Could Democrats actually get something done? I think in the last 6 weeks with the IRA, with the CHIPS and Science Act, we put the PACT Act together, the best advance in health care for veterans in 10 years. We did something on guns for the first time in 30 years that reduces the violence. We did the NATO bill. All of those things in 6 weeks was marvelous accomplishments on various different fronts. And the people are going to see Democrats can get something done, even with a 50-50 margin in a caucus that runs from Bernie Sanders to Joe Manchin. Not an easy job, but we did it.
Majority Leader Schumer, I appreciate it. I'm sorry about the death of your father, and what a blessing to have had him in your life for so long.
Thank you.
I wish you the best.
You.
Up next.
He's still here giving us guidance. He's still here giving us guidance, Anderson.
Well, we could all use some guidance. Senator, thank you. An update on a remarkable young man, 8-year-old Cooper Roberts, who was paralyzed during the July 4th Highland Park shooting. That's next. Bright note to end the program. 8-year-old Cooper Roberts, who was paralyzed in the Highland Park mass shooting, could soon be heading back to school. Cooper's currently in a rehab hospital after being moved out of pediatric ICU last week. His family says he's now doing daily physical activity to help regain strength and mobility. He'll be there for another 6 to 12 weeks, and he's expected to join his twin brother for half days at school and do outpatient rehab. Take a look. Cooper has also been reunited with a family dog, George. He's been asking for him after the shooting. Great friends reunited. We wish him the best. That's it for this episode of AC360. You can check out our lineup of podcasts and showcasts at cnn.com/podcasts or in your favorite podcast app. Thanks for listening.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.